from MLU headquarters in Philadelphia.
You should go underneath it.
Oh, way out deep!
This is Cleats and Cuffs.
Hit man! Oh, what a one! Murray!
Everything ultimate, from the field to the boardroom.
Hey, you got this?
There?
Oh, yes!
Hello,
Mr. Graham!
Hello, and thanks for joining us on Cleats and Cufflinks. I'm back here again with Mr. Dusty Rhodes. Dusty, thanks for coming on again.
Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, I think we're going to make this a regular thing, I think. Semi-regular.
I have to clear my schedule.
The partially regular.
Not irregular.
Not irregular, in any sense. We're also proud to introduce the start of what I hope will be an ongoing tradition here, which is the ultimate shirt under the blazer tradition. Something I'm not allowed to do in the office on a day-to-day basis by rights of our dress code.
You specifically, or
just
does that apply to everyone?
Mainly just me. Lindy, our CFO, Lindy Sabo, is very specific about that rule as applied to me.
Well, you have to have a good face.
As she put it, what did she say? She said, you're not a Silicon Valley venture capitalist.
She has yet to have a conversation with me.
It's going to be a whole different conversation. I'm
put a collar on. So, well, I like my collars here and there too. It's just
just sometimes every now and then.
It's a good travel shirt.
Yeah, I would agree. So what shirt are we wearing today?
This is
a lot of horse heads.
This is the latest in horse heads, as you said. Oh, yeah. This is from my club masters team called Horse. This is why it has all the horses on it in the various colors. This is our jersey from 2 years ago. We don't really wear this because it's neither light or dark, as it turned out.
It does not work well in a lot of
contexts. Well, it does work because our other jersey was a white polo.
Okay.
So we always got to wear our white polos.
So this was kind of just this is the dress shirt that you wear to the party afterwards.
Right. And it turned out nobody had a jersey that would work opposite of this one, so we had to scrap it. But yeah, it's actually the only club team I still play on. So that's my tie to Club Ultimate still, as I get to play in the Masters division, which is fun.
Little Masters division play. What's the ruling on Masters now? What is the age group?
The ruling? We're all over the hill.
Where do you get to start?
I believe it's 33, which I've passed by enough years that it feel close.
When do they do the next level? When is the Super Masters?
The Grandmasters? I think that's 40.
40, okay. All right. Man, I think I'm going to wait till then. I'll get back in at 40.
I'll tell you, there's a decent number of guys who are playing in the Masters division who really don't belong there.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it.
Like Robbie Gillies, for example.
Robbie Gillies is playing in the Masters?
He was on horse with
That's
me.
That's hardly fair.
Because horses are what ponies grow up into. And we played on pony together in 2010, I believe.
Yeah.
And Robbie was almost unstoppable at the Masters level.
Yeah, I don't understand how he wouldn't be.
It's tough when you have the legs of a horse and the body of a human to be stopped on the Frisbee field.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got like 23-year-old legs.
Oh, it's incredible. He played very well. We had a great run last year. Anyway,
did you go to Nationals? Did you get in?
Okay, went out to the Denver.
Was it Denver?
Or wherever we were in Colorado. I think we drove away from Denver to Commerce City.
Denver. Oh, that's right. They don't do Club Masters at Club Nationals anymore. I totally forgot
August.
About that. Yeah, and it was during Wildwood a couple years ago.
2 years ago, maybe last year as well, I'm not sure.
Yeah, because I remember missing some of the key characters I always see messing up the beach at Wildwood.
To be fair, I've loved the Wildwoods that I've gone to. I don't need any more in my back pocket.
The Wildwood is...
I've survived.
It's a thing. Well, we might get you out there again more in an MLU
Good
persona. You never know. We're going to do Cleats and Cufflinks live from the beach.
As long as that doesn't involve me failing at Frisbee against, say, MLU players, that would be perfect.
That's really all I shoot for. I just hide in the shade or whatever's going to protect me from the giver of cancer.
And life and energy.
Well, sure, it has side benefits, side effects.
Often many measures.
Oh man! So anyway, let's get into it. We got a couple of things we want to get through today, and I think first and foremost, it wouldn't be a Cleats and Cufflinks with Dusty if we didn't start with basketball. I wanted to talk though about I was traveling this week. I went out to Detroit for some meetings, and in the hotel in Detroit, you know, you're watching things that you wouldn't normally watch at home, and I came across the NBA All-Star Game.
Not starting this conversation on the right note with me.
And, you know, I'm going to admit I watched like 6 minutes of it and I was annoyed because it just didn't seem like a game to me. But what I did think about while I was watching it is, what, you know, we've always talked about an MLU All-Star Game, or even more broadly an ultimate kind of mm-hmm. all-star game. And I'm wondering like what that would look like, how that would mirror sort of my experience potentially with the NBA game, which was sort of just a zero defense, 180-something to 170-something affair.
Oh, I think they got to 196, maybe, 194.
Wow. Is that a record? Or,
oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes, that's a record by far.
Okay.
By all about right. 50 points per team.
Well, seeing as every fast break layup was shot from 30 feet out.
well, and they kept the pace up a lot, so they were putting up a lot of shots. They put up a lot more shots, had a lot more possessions than previous.
They weren't working the ball around.
Well, right, because when you vote for your players to be in the All-Star game as a fan, you're voting for players. You're not voting for their team. You're voting for the individual to go do his individual things. We've talked about the defense in All-Star games a little bit, but you don't want it to be overwhelmingly defensive. You don't want it to be a grind it out, what have you.
Sure.
You want to keep it free, and while we can argue that the NBA has possibly lost its way a little bit, too much defense isn't what we're going for either. But in terms of ultimate, there's a long-running All-Star game at Poultry Days.
Oh, yes, so, true. So I haven't actually been to Poultry Days, which I'm ashamed to admit.
You should be. The chicken's fantastic.
I know. I just want to... can I just go eat?
Yes. It's a festival that happens to have a Frisbee tournament.
Oh, I'm in.
It was a poultry festival starting in the 50s, and then the Frisbee tournament popped up in the early 80s, I want to say, late 70s.
Every report of it is amazing. So,
they select one player from each of the teams that finishes with a winning record on the first day. I know. I was happy enough to be selected during one of the years that I played back then.
You were a Poultry Days All-Star.
I do. I should have worn that jersey, except it has no sleeves on it, so it would have been quite chilly.
All right. Well, we'll save the Poultry Days All-Star jersey for next time around. But
the experience was such that I never touched the disc in the All-Star game. I must have played about 5 or 6 points and never saw the Frisbee, because what happens in the All-Star game for Ultimate is similar to what happens in the NBA All-Star game. Every time somebody catches it, they think, I have to throw a goal. Or they think, I have to throw the hardest possible pass that I can come up with. And some of those passes were some of the feats that I, to this day, haven't seen any equal. Like, these are 60, 70-yard thumbers delivered, like, in stride to receivers who are covered by legitimate defenders. This is throwing between somebody's legs for a 50-yard gainer. This is, like, some of the things
like
that you see there
trick
are just
stuff.
Unreal.
So
but
you said legitimate
time,
defender, though.
Yeah, no, they were playing legitimate defense.
They were playing.
What's one of the biggest plays in Ultimate?
It's
the
a layout
block.
Of course. It's the only play in Ultimate.
And during the All-Star game for Poultry Days, most of the other teams who are there are in the stands watching. And some of the people from the festival come in and they watch this game during the tournament, because why would they go watch the tournament games when they can watch the All-Stars? So you're trying for these big layout blocks and everything, and Miss Chick, who is voted on for the festival, plays in it. They always try to throw the person who doesn't know how to play Ultimate.
Who has no idea how to play. Oh, so this is like a...
Oh, it's a thing.
The Poultry Days festival, separate from the Ultimate, sends a player...
Well, not, she's not really a player.
Well, sends
she's
a representative.
Yeah, she's the winner of the Miss Chick competition.
Is this
a
beauty competition?
I assume so.
Talent?
I didn't actually ask for her credentials.
Okay, all right.
She's the one wearing a dress.
She's the one that they sent over. So that's the one that plays.
Yeah, so they have this whole thing. But, you know, me, this was back when I must have been 23 or 24 or something. And my role in a Frisbee game is generally to catch passes and throw complete passes. That's not really what an All-Star
game
is about.
That's not what an All-Star game is about.
For the very first point, what I did is I sort of went over to, like, the far side handler position. So I was like, oh, my guy's not covering me over here. We're going to swing the disc around. We're going to get an easy goal. Yeah, but the guy caught the pull and chucked it down to the other end of the field before any of us were even down there. Because it's an All-Star game and you can do anything. So that's what is interesting about this, is that even with Ultimate, where you rely on your teammates and you have to throw it to your teammates, you get this sort of egocentric style of play. And you lack that balance between sort of what a team can do and what you want to do as an individual to sort of show your worth in an All-Star environment. So you're lacking some of the connectivity of the game, but you still see these individual incredible plays.
Mm. So let's take that then in stride. So you obviously have, there's a bit of showmanship involved in it. There's a bit of freedom, right? So you can do that stuff, which I saw over-exemplified, as I mentioned, in the NBA game. Looking at that compared to, you know, the Pro Bowl, the, you have the Pro Bowl in football, you know, you have the NBA All-Star, the MLB All-Star mm-hmm. game, which they actually put stakes on now, yes. right? You to get home field advantage in the World Series, that game actually matters. For
it matters in a sense, but there's a thing with the Major League Baseball All-Star game where there's far less contact between players.
Right.
So you're not tamping that. I mean, unless you're Pete Rose sliding in head first in the All-Star game, knocking people out anyway, which there was a big uproar about way back when. But you see, you separate a little bit. So, like, a pitcher isn't going to be encouraged to throw only change-ups. He's right. just going to go out and pitch.
He's going to go out and pitch. It's more of a normal game. I think that we talked about this, too, is that the NBA All-Star game takes place right in the middle of the NBA yeah. season, or well, toward the end a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, but it's a little more than halfway through.
But you're looking at players who are not going to put anything on the line in terms of injury,
right?
Because they still have seasons that they're playing. Yeah.
And injuries happen.
At least most of them do.
Really extending yourself. Oh, yeah. Well, most of the All-Star players are, they tend to be on better teams,
yeah.
although you'll still get some sort of bottom feeders who are really exemplary. But none of them want injury. So that's
yep.
And playing defense when people are actually attacking the rim is one of the more dangerous things you can do in basketball. What I would like to see in an NBA game is similar to what you would do as a defensive player in a Frisbee game, is like try to set yourself up for crazy blocks. Try to set yourself up for like a poach block somewhere. So why don't all the players just gamble for steals? Like shoot passing lanes all the time. Try to pick everybody's pocket. Because then you're playing defense, but you're not really chasing the guy down after he beats you.
Yeah, you're not coming from behind him.
You're trying
and
to
risk that injury, but you're still trying to make the crowd interested. And look, I mean, some of the best plays in basketball are blocks.
Oh yeah.
So, and then football is interesting. Football happens after the season, but before the Super Bowl. But the problem with football is that there's like, I mean, how many games? You know, average football player's career is like 3 years, right?
Oh, yeah, about that.
Yeah. And so you're playing, what is 16, the, I don't know. What,
16 games per year.
16 games
times
per year.
Is, what, that's 48.
Yep. So you're playing that many games. And if you play three extra games, that is a percentage of damage
yeah.
of bodily harm. Because every football game, it's like, I always think of football games when I watch football players play. I watch them go out and play a game. It's not everybody. Like, some of them defy these things, but you go out and play a game, it's almost like watching a video game character with a certain amount of life. And every game just knocks off yeah. pieces of that. So you add those games that don't, quote unquote, matter, seems kind of irrational. And a lot of players think that. They don't go.
Well, yeah, they beg out with minor injuries that definitively didn't stop them from playing for the whole season.
Right.
And they come up with excuses where they don't want to go. And when you watch the game, there's a problem with a totally violent collision-based sport when you remove the violence and the collisions from it. It's not the same thing.
It's really not.
So, like, why are we pretending that it is? Maybe we should just play flag football for the NFL.
That would be amazing. Like,
NFL is that. Carry on.
I've said this to Marie. My wife is a big football fan, and I'm not as big a football fan. But I've said this to her for years. I would love to see NFL players play flag football.
Right.
I think the skill level would be phenomenal. It would be really fun to watch.
And in a lot of ways, that's kind of what Ultimate is you're playing flag football with a Frisbee. You just can't run with it.
That is kind of true.
You know, there are a lot of the ways that we look at it and the way that we experience it, specifically when we have the Frisbee in our hands, is very much like a quarterback. When you're running around, it's a little less like a wide receiver, but you have more time, all of that. But the way that you go through it, removing the contact, I'd like to see NFL players play Frisbee for a while. Let's just make the All-Star game that. Give them a Frisbee, see what happens.
All right, I'm making a note. We're gonna call Goodell up and just get that done.
You got him on speed dial.
Yeah, no, he's...
I didn't even know.
We're buddies, you know. No, that would be amazing. So think about this then. So what does an MLU All-Star game look like in your mind? Have you thought about this at all? Like,
a little bit, here and there.
When does it happen?
Well,
who does it involve? Where does it happen?
The way that I always figured it would work best generally in a league, is that you would hold it on the same weekend as your championship event, and you would restrict it to players that are not playing in the championship event.
Mm.
Right. So the NFL does that already, because now they have the Pro Bowl just before the Super Bowl. They used to have it after. So any players
is it the weekend before?
Yeah. So any players before, participating yeah. in the Super Bowl don't play in the Pro Bowl, which is fine.
Yeah, it's during that down week.
So you would have it that same way, and you would just try to get enough players out there to facilitate the offenses. But at the same time, you would want players who want to try to do things more. So you need that mix of players who maintain possession enough that, like, you can do these incredible things.
Right.
But not, like, be so conservative or whatever the way that you'd be during a regular season.
But do you get that choice, or are we looking at a situation where we'd have like fans vote on this? Like, do you, you
know? Oh, I would absolutely go for the fan vote.
You got to have a fan vote, right?
There, like, for all the flack that you get for NBA fan voting, the most that you're going to get off is like one or two players.
And, yeah.
But then you're engaging the fans, so why would you not want that? But then you can fill out the rest of the roster. So the NBA fills it out by having coaches vote, or more accurately, having their assistants fill out the rosters for them. Because which NBA coach actually cares about who's in the All-Star game? They're busy preparing for the opponent. You know, so like...
Right, exactly.
You just have to aim for approximately the right mix of players.
I think it would be a lot of fun. And I do agree with you. I think that, particularly given the logistical challenges that, yeah, you know, young leagues have anyway, the real option is during that championship game weekend.
Well, that's not even... I mean, it's not just for... league play, that would also work for tournament play as well. So
right,
at your national championships, why that would be the right time to theoretically have an All-Star game if you were going to have an All-Star game.
For the club level.
Right.
Oh, yeah, so, absolutely.
I mean, right now, the games that
everyone
are played
would go
on,
watch that.
The games that are played on Saturday are semis and then consolation games. So you've got a bunch of players that aren't really playing. I mean, they're playing meaningful games in terms of flights and all of that, but you've got a group of players there, possibly the most talented group of players assembled every single year. Perhaps that's the right time to have an All-Star game.
I would watch it. I mean, like you said, I think Ultimate differs a little because defense is such a fun part of it.
Yeah.
And when we've done a couple of years in a row the Wildwood game with like MLU yeah, players, and we did the Boracay Dragons one, that was insane.
They were great.
It was so much fun.
I loved watching them play Beach Ultimate. They have no fear. And seeing the way that Josh Marquette was playing in that game,
you
understand that some of the throws that he throws during games, like that's 10% of the arsenal, right? Like he's got...
He throws things during games that look like things you would only throw during an All-Star right, game. So I remember that one throw. I can't remember what game it was, but he did this little like two-handed backhand brush pass over the top thing, and you're like, I need to see. You were calling the game. You're like, I need to see a replay because I don't actually know what he just did.
It was a high release flick where he's sort of holding the disc back on his hand with his off hand, because I actually saw him do that in another game.
High release flick, two handed.
So that's definitively a throw that he uses in specific situations and has practiced enough that he knows when to use it. And he's the first person and only person yet that I've seen do that.
I think we're going to see a lot more of it. People are going to start to develop these sorts of things more and more, I have a feeling. So, obviously, there's tons of challenges with the All-Star Game. I think it would be amazing. It would be amazing to get that many good players in one place. It would be expensive.
as it turns out.
That's the business side of me thinks. It would be expensive. But it would be really cool. And I think the other thing that makes the All-Star Games such cool things are the side events too, right? So, you know, sure, the dunk contest, the three-point contest, the home run derby, I'm assuming hockey has something.
I think they do a shootout.
Shootout.
I don't follow hockey well enough to know for sure.
Yeah, hockey had a big thing with their All-Star game too. Didn't they do a player vote and they got somebody?
I think his name was John Nash, but he's essentially a defenseman, kind of a fighter, I thought.
Yeah, kind of a mid-level guy, but he scored like two goals in the All-Star
game. They also demoted him to a different league. Like, he got voted in by the fans, and then he got demoted to, like, a support league for the NHL. So when he was in the All-Star game, he wasn't technically
in the NHL. He was actually playing in, like, the AHL?
In, like, the minor league.
Yeah. That's amazing.
So and then he was eventually the MVP of that All-Star game.
That's a fantastic story. Let's right, talk about that story some other time, because that's ridiculous, and I want to get more into that. But so for now, like, we have those things, those sort of, like, support events, those... Yeah. Sideshows to the All-Star game.
Sense.
Very much sideshows. What are Frisbee sideshows?
Yeah, so I've been trying to think about this for a while, and I've come up with only about two.
Okay, that's something.
One is kind of obvious, because Frisbee relies on throwing, so a test of your throwing skill.
Yeah.
Well, that's disc golf. So we already have chains that we can do with this with, and targets that we can do this with.
Mm.
Frisbee players are surprisingly incompetent at hitting a target that can't adjust for the pass. Because the sphere of catchability for an object is much smaller than for a human.
Much smaller.
It's almost like a human that's not interested in catching the Frisbee.
Oh, I've played with some of those.
Precisely. So you could set up, you know, a disc golf basket, have it at a distance, then, you know, walk people back and see how far you can make a throw from. Or you could have something else along those lines where you have like a space that you have to hit a throw into. Or you could do like a, what's the longest pass that we could complete between two teammates? You know, like something like that where you would mostly be focusing on the throwing aspect of the game.
So what would you think about then in that same line? What about something like football does with the moving targets that get kind of pulled across the field at different distances?
And you do like however many throws you get.
You get as many throws you want. You get points for the different distances. I think that would be fun to watch. I would watch that.
Right. So now that you're making me think about the NFL sort of skills things that they do that. And they also have one where you set up different ones at different depths without moving. It's still just as interesting, kind of. But then they also have the receiver challenge, where they have like a jugs machine just shoot balls at them.
Yeah.
How many do you catch? Or at least they used to do this. Or maybe this is the pro skills challenge or something. They used to do something like this. So theoretically, you could have a thrower gun passes just at a bunch of receivers,
ripping them at them.
Which is essentially what Guts is, which we kind of mentioned earlier.
We did talk about Guts, which if you guys haven't seen it, is basically you stand not far enough away from each other and throw it as hard as you can.
The discs are a little floppier. Opponent.
They are a little floppier, but it's still terrifying.
I'm not really signing up for that.
Yeah, that's not my game. I also think that, you know, simple things, too, are interesting. Everybody loves to see it thrown far.
Mm-hmm.
Distance competition seems obvious.
I can't believe I didn't think of that until you started saying it.
It would be fun. Like, you just have a full-on distance competition.
You got to outlaw the rollers before the competition starts, though.
Oh, yeah, it's where it lands. It's where it lands.
Now that we've covered it.
Yeah, but obviously, too, the interesting thing about it is that you're going to see players show up in the distance competition that don't necessarily show up as big in the games like you do in golf. You know, often you'll see the golfers a little down the thing, but they can hit the ball a mile, but for some reason they cannot do the things that follow that as well.
Putting's hard.
Putting is so hard.
Well, there's also, you could also do like a pull accuracy competition.
Okay.
So you could have people line up and do pulls and then
aim for...
You can aim for like the coffin corner, essentially.
That would be very cool.
Or even just to see how many players can actually reach the end zone on their pulls.
It's a long way.
The demonstration over the last couple of years seems to show that not as many players can throw 80 yards as I thought.
And this was the stat that you were asking... that you're asking Luke for today. Yeah, we're looking to add a couple more stats, have some people coming into work. One of them is the throw distance on the pull.
And for goals.
And, yeah, the throw distance for goals.
Yeah. Definitely interested in both of those. So
that is interesting.
There's another competition that I was thinking of, which is something we used to do at Pike practices occasionally when we were having like fun at the end of practice or whatever. You have an elimination break mark drill. So you set up a mark, thrower, and you set up a receiver at the other side. And you have, you know, 3 seconds or 2 seconds. And you sort of go down with the seconds bit by bit. And so if you complete your pass, then you get to go mark the next person. If you throw an incompletion, you have to get a point block in order to stay in the competition. So you have sort of an elimination style. This would be similar to what the NBA would do if you had a one-on-one competition. So it'd be like a very simple, like, elimination.
Simple, quick elimination. I do remember when we did that on Pike. I was eliminated really, really quickly. I never learned to throw, really. And I never learned to mark.
Marking wasn't really what you were about either.
If I was marking, I'd made some kind of mistake in the previous few seconds, and I was so disappointed.
I never had that level of disappointment as a defender. And, as soon as that guy had the disc in his hand, he was all mine. That's what I wanted.
The only thing I did at that point was foul. That's just where it led. I don't know what to say. It's just what happened.
Sometimes by accident?
I'm not going to self-incriminate. I'm pleading the fifth on that one.
I think the statute of limitations... Are you going back to the club division? I think the statute of limitations
it's over?
Is pretty well
okay,
going
yeah, there
over.
Was a lot of intentional ones.
To be fair, you were not the only one in those games intentionally fouling people.
But it was professional.
But it wasn't... It's interesting when you talk about intentional fouls in Ultimate, because there certainly was an era where intentional fouling was more prevalent than it is now. And we played during part of that.
Yeah.
And it goes in waves. Like, the pendulum has swung back and forth here and there. But there was a time where it was accepted practice where if you tried to step through for a backhand, the arm was just going to chop down on your arm.
Yeah.
And if you could throw through the chop.
Is that not a thing anymore?
Right. So, like, it's different. And there's still this thing where you bump people on the mark, like, right as they catch the disc. And you're not really trying to bump them, but you're not really trying to avoid them.
You're not really not trying to bump them.
Yeah, there's this gray area. But intentional fouling, that doesn't work in the marking competition. You get...
You're right out. You get kicked out. Yeah, see, I don't know what you do. Yeah. I mean, basically, you know, up to stall seven, it wasn't an intentional foul. You just weren't allowed to throw to the break side.
And this is the way I could come up with stall seven.
And I have to use what's available to me.
And on all the teams that I've played on, there has been tension about when, like, that sort of play. Like, there's a gray area there where I know that the action that I'm about to undertake could possibly result in a foul. Should I take it or not? And I was like, and another side of that is, how quickly do you count the stall? I got criticized for having too slow a stall count.
You were actually counting as many as 8 seconds.
Walt Kalicki and I were constantly accused of having too slow a stall count. We're both like, but we're counting to 10.
No,
we're not changing this.
No, Walt though, and shout out to Walt. Walt would count the first like 7 counts pretty slow.
Yeah, he was a little sneaky.
Yeah,
I'll give you
that. He would actually do it the other way around. I'm sorry. I want to correct that. He would do it the other way around, which is much smarter. When you speed up at the end, people catch you, and then you have to go back, right?
But if
you count the first 4 really fast...
Before you even caught it, maybe.
Yeah, it doesn't... They don't notice that as much. It's interesting. We had other things on our agenda, but I'm interested maybe now that we've gotten onto this topic and given the time we have left, we could stick here for a minute. I think you brought up an interesting point there where you said... There are moments where you decide whether or not you're going to enter a situation where you may foul somebody.
Right.
There's a difference between that and intentionally just grabbing someone's arm. Right.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that I always thought was interesting is the way that those situations were judged from the sideline. So if you hack someone's arm when they throw,
it's usually obvious. Also,
that's really obvious. But it's seen as so much worse than if, as a thrower, you throw your arm into someone's shoulder in an attempt to get a foul. You know what I mean? That classic throw. People didn't seem to mind that as much. And maybe this is my bias as a defender, but people didn't seem to mind the kind of drawing a foul intentionally as opposed to committing a foul.
But so when you first started saying that, I wasn't thinking of drawing a foul as a thrower. I was thinking of committing a foul as a thrower to get more space.
The little push-off.
Lots of people do the... jab you with the disc, which
I hate that.
I, as a defender, that's one of those calls that I call as a defender because you don't get to jab me with a disc. I don't have a disc to jab you with, so it's not fair.
But I could in a second.
Right. Like I could start jabbing you with my fingers. But it's that sort of thing where I was thinking more about like the way you pivot and you create a little bit of contact and that lets the defender know that I need to have this space. Mm-hmm. So it's like a conversation on some level. But the thing with throwing is that we all understand what happens when a player is fouled while throwing.
Yeah.
Right, so the outrage is that play is now stopping. That guy thought he was going to throw a completion, and you've now stopped us from doing that. I don't think it's the outrage so much as the actual contact, because 9 times out of 10, you would rather not foul that guy when he's trying to complete the throw. If you were going to intentionally foul him, you would prefer to intentionally foul him before he threw.
Oh, yeah, you don't want him to let go of it.
And if you're not trying to foul him, you would prefer not to foul him.
Right.
So it's this sort of space where... there's a negotiation between those two players, and the result of the foul is so much more frustrating than the foul itself. Like, to see that disc just kind of go fluttering off into the distance when you're like, that was our best thrower, he had a great huck open. You know, it's just such a letdown.
It's a huge frustration. I see what you mean. It's interesting, too, because I think this applies to both kind of the club game, which has more of the self-officiated feel, the observer feel, and the pro game, which is a ref feel, is... The going back to the point, like putting yourself in a situation where you could foul, like where you're likely even to foul somebody.
What is the line? Yeah.
Where's the percentage chance of fouling somebody where it's like I shouldn't go in there? And I'm not talking about dangerous plays.
Right. I was going to say it's a different.
Because that's
line
a different thing. That's
it is with.
Yeah.
So like you have to be a little more careful with kick blocks than you should be with your hands and arms because you have cleats on and they're sharp and all of that. But the thing for me was that, I didn't have much problem figuring those calculations out because I was either trying to make the play or I was not trying to make the play. There wasn't, the fouls that I've committed in actual games, none were intentional.
No professional fouls.
There was not one, because that's the thing that I hated most about my experience in soccer was being asked to commit professional fouls.
Yep.
And as the guy who was tasked with marking the other team's best scoring threat...
That was going to get asked
kind of the job.
Yeah, right? That is pretty much most of the job.
Or the guy who would, you know, just be an irritant on some level, because I really wasn't that good at soccer, as it turned out. So in Ultimate, I was given an opportunity to not ever have to make that decision, so I didn't. I just didn't.
It's such a different way of thinking, too, because in soccer, the way that foul is painted is a risk scenario,
yep.
Right?
Risk reward.
You're beat, and the guy's going to goal, and he's probably going to score. Is it worth the risk to stop him to get kicked out of the game and have your team play down a man?
Well, and that's and
or
that's
is
one
it
of the,
not?
And that's one of the things that doesn't happen in Ultimate, because there
right.
is no risk.
There,
you
the
can
risk
hack
isn't
the
there.
Crap out of somebody and keep playing. And there's a problem where there's, to me, there's a problem where there's not a mechanism to remove someone from the game for doing that, say, twice.
So we have that in the MLU,
right.
obviously,
and you do
with
have,
the ban system.
And you do have that in USAU when the game is observed. Or when,
they do now, yeah. And I don't know those rules very well, so I can't speak to them as well.
But. When it's observed, there is power to remove players from games. I think it's a little lenient, considering that the rules themselves state that you can't do these things and it's a gross offense to the game. I don't think that you should get a second chance. I think you should be out of the game
immediately. You're just out right away.
Because you're undermining the viability of the game itself, and you've already stated that you're not going to do that. So you're being like hypocritical if you intentionally foul. So what do we want you on the field for? But...
I would have been out of a lot of games.
The thing with risk and reward is that when you change that equation, when you put that on the player, some players respond to it one way, some players respond to it another way. I was happy not to have to think about the equation of fouling people. Not every player is that way, and not every person thinks that way. There are still players in Ultimate who are going to think, well, I could just bump him off this throw, or I could bump him on this cut a little bit. It's not a bad foul. They're still going to have the disc. But they won't have scored yet. You know, that calculus is still going on. And
it's also not clear, like, what contact is okay and what's not. I mean, that's still
getting
figured
out.
It's different by player. It's different by, you know, in the league. It's different by ref.
Well, it's different by official
self-officials. Exactly. Each official has a different interpretation. If the player is the official or an official is the official, they're going to have a different interpretation of what constitutes a foul, what constitutes, you know, just the contact natural in the game. I always loved playing ring because... There was apparently no boundary.
No, there wasn't.
And I loved that.
Well, at least not that you would reasonably think of.
Yeah, who's the super tall guy? Mickey?
Mickey, yeah.
Mickey.
Yeah.
Mickey was what,
6'10"?
6'10".
I just watched him play in the 2002 national final with Ring.
Is there a reason why I always end up guarding him?
You have to be somebody who's...
I'm 5'11".
You have to get in his way.
That was the thing. And what was great about him is I would hit him. He would go to cut, and I would just lean a shoulder into his hip.
Approximately.
And he'd go, nice D. And he'd go turn and go the other way. I'm like, I love playing you.
That's what he dealt with in practice every week with those players.
Speed on each other.
That's the way that you play. And when you play in a specific style, you want to impose your style on your opponent because that's to your advantage in terms of winning the game. But when you're negotiating what that line is as a group of officials / players, then it becomes difficult. Like, should I negotiate this game to be more physically imposing, or is that being too intimidating? But I want to be intimidating because that's one of the ways to get in my opponent's head. Am I not supposed to get in my opponent's head? You know, like, what is the competitive
right.
balance there when you're negotiating the contract, essentially, with your opponent? And, you know, for our teams, we had Jude on our team, who was basically the person that we would send in when there was a dispute. When there was any sort of discussion,
the lawyer.
We would send Jude in, because some of us didn't always want to do it, and some of us weren't quite as aggressive about it. And it wasn't bad, it was just he was there to win the argument.
That was
it didn't matter what side we were on in the argument, his job was to win the argument.
I remember playing dog once, and he had a ruler out measuring the height of the grass.
He also stopped one of our games against Goat because one of their players was wearing a watch.
I love it. I love it. Well, I think that, you know, we've got to wrap up here in a second, but I think that, you know, one of the things that's interesting about this conversation and that it brings up in my mind is there are different types of Ultimate for different people. There are different ways to play this game and different ways to experience it for different people. You know, for me, I loved soccer and I loved the risk reward scenario. I liked that thinking. I like contact. I like a physical game.
I'm with you on that part.
Yeah, I know you are. So I like that stuff. And so that's why in my mind, you know, I don't think players should intentionally foul. I don't. But I do think that there's a gray area between intentionally fouling and putting yourself in a position where you may foul somebody, right, where people taking that risk should be taking it with that in mind. So there should be consequences to that risk.
Right.
And that's what creates the boundary and separation between the intent and the and legality.
It's a and when we played and when I played and when you played and we played together and when people played in the past, when you play at that top level, there is more contact than there are at the other levels. The rules aren't different, but there's more contact. So navigating that space for different levels of play is appropriate, has been done, and always will be done.
Absolutely.
Like, there's more contact in NBA basketball than there is in youth basketball, too.
Absolutely. And
a lot of the contact in youth basketball, the kids are just running into each other because they don't know where they're going.
I've seen a lot of that. I watched some 10-year-old basketball recently. It was fantastic. Well, we've come full circle. We started at basketball. We ended at basketball. We didn't go through the points that we had laid out for ourselves today.
We got through some of them.
But I think we had some good contact, some good discussion. I really enjoyed it. Thanks again, Dusty, for coming on. Tell the people your Twitter handle.
I still haven't written this down
yet.
You
got to write it
down,
so hold it up. Yeah.
Dustweet R, DustWeeter. Dustweeter.
Dustweeter. And you can reach me at Nick Darling, N-I-C Darling. Or you can get us at Athletes and Cufflinks. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you next week.